The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance
on News Talk.
As the violence in Coolock continues to worsen, the Garda Representative Association has called for improved protection for its members. Joining me now, Aisling Maloney, political correspondent for the Irish Daily Mail, and Mark O'Mara, president of the Garda Representative Association. Good morning to you both. We'll start with you, Aisling, to fill us in on what's been happening since that major riot in Coolock over a week ago.
Yeah, so I suppose people remember this time last week, last Monday, it kind of really started to kick off in Coolock, and this is at the site of the Crown Paints factory, a former factory there in Coolock that's now being used, or it's being proposed to be used and earmarked to house asylum seekers. And it first kicked off, I suppose, when workers went in to actually start kind of refurbishing the site to actually start accommodating asylum seekers at some point in the future. But Pat, we've known about this potential accommodation centre since as far back as March, and there had been protests outside the site since as far back as then. So it kind of kicked off last Monday. There was, as you said, rioting outside. There was violent scenes and violent clashes, and that kind of continued on for a couple of days. It was quelled on Monday, but kind of it kind of went back up then later in the week. There was kind of a peaceful protest as well on one day, where there was over 1,000 people outside the Crown Paints factory, as people in Coolock are saying that they are opposed to the centre. At least those there were kind of making that known. And there was also, I suppose, violence at that protest, which kind of escalated into a riot. Gardaí were injured as well. And they're obviously, as you said, the GRA, and I know you're talking to Mark O'Mara, who's good. Obviously, they're calling for better equipment resources for the Gardaí. But essentially, what's happening now, I suppose there was another fire last night, Pat. There's been 4 fires there in the last 7 days. Now, it was brought under control quickly, I understand, and it was described as a minor fire, but the Dunbar Fire Brigade had attended the scene, and the Malahide Road was closed for a short time. I suppose in the political sphere, the idea that, I suppose, Gardaí are trying to handle things on the ground and the situation as it escalates or as it develops, but overall, this is obviously something the government is involved with, as they selected or as the centre was offered to the government, and they took that offer up. What's happening now is that the government has said last week that they are still pressing ahead with the accommodation centre. My understanding is that nothing has changed in that regard. However, I suppose it's kind of a wait and see, because things change very quickly in this realm.
Now but, you say it was offered to the government, so that means that there's a third party involved here, the owner of that facility.
Exactly. So what happens is, I suppose everyone knows the situation that the state finds itself in. We've got nearly 2,400 male asylum applicants who have been left homeless essentially by the government on their arrival here since December. And the government are at an extreme pinch to find accommodation for asylum seekers, because we are also at the same time accommodating just over 40,000 refugees from Ukraine in state accommodation. So obviously a real pinch there. And there are 31,000 people in direct provision, which is the asylum applicant system where they're waiting for their application. So obviously a real pinch to find any sort of accommodation. And this came into the government. What happens is private centres, private maybe B&Bs, guest houses, whatever, will make their offer known to the government and to the Department of Integration to say, look, I have X and Y facility and I can provide X and Y. What's the what's the contract? Yeah.
Do we know the nature of this contract, in the sense that the works that are being done, are they being done by the owner in order to, get a decent rent from the government for the facility, making it ready? Or is the government responsible for these works?
Well, my understanding is that when someone offers, it's their responsibility to get it up to a standard at which the government contracts it. So that's my understanding. However, we aren't really let into what the to's and fro's are in a lot of these contracts.
Now, the reason I ask this question is that the responsibility for securing the plant, the facility, would be down to the person who actually is in charge of this refurbishment. So it's the government, then the government has to protect it. If it's a private individual, well, maybe that private individual would have to employ his or her own security.
it is still private property, Pat. Like, it's the government didn't buy this site. They are contracting it. So it is still a private, it is still private property. Now, what we know and what the department or the Minister for Integration, Roger O'Gorman, kind of explained last week is that they're made aware of what's happening and the private owner, I suppose, and where, you know, works are happening, the Gardaí are kind of liaising with them, and they kind of go through their security plan. So that's what happened last Monday, Pat. They, in the middle of the night, actually, they moved in people, a digger and different things to start actual works, I suppose, on the site. And Gardaí accompanied them in doing that and moved the protest camp on and kind of disbanded the camp. And that's what Gardaí did. And then obviously there were private security workers also involved in this. Gardaí, I understand, withdrew early in the morning. And that's what kind of led to a brewing situation of unrest, because there wasn't Gardaí there. There was security workers, and one security worker was actually injured and was hospitalised last Monday after being attacked at the site. So, you know, it's very difficult to, I mean, even the Gardaí, like our state's police, are finding it difficult to bring this under control. So you can understand how difficult it would be for security workers, many of whom are actually, you know, they're often minimum wage and often from a migrant background themselves, and can be subject to abuse because this protest is very heavily anti-migrant and racist. I mean, if you look, if anyone sees any of the pictures of Coolock and sees some of the things that are written on the, there's now cement kind of cement bricks, cement walls, kind of like standalone walls that are up at the site to kind of secure the site. And the things that they've written on those are, they're racist. I don't think you could say any different. I think it's, you know, what they've written on them about migrants, about people from outside Ireland coming here. It is.
So, now, do we have any idea of the extent of local support? I mean, there was the big protest, which was by and large peaceful, with a couple of skirmishes, with 1,000 people lining up at Crown Paints.
I think, like, Pat, there's a couple of people involved in, like, in this situation, and I suppose it's quite nuanced. So you have, like, there's certainly an element of this a group of people involved who would probably go anywhere where there's trouble. They would, you know, they're looking for a fight, essentially. They're looking to get involved in violence.
What kind of age group are you talking about? Are you talking
some of those are young people. They are young men, teenagers. I mean, we all saw the videos and, you know, scenes from Coolock of young fellas lighting trees on fire, all that. I mean, you can't say that they are, I suppose, community leaders at the age of 16. I mean, saying Coolock says no. So there's a faction of that. I'm not trying to say that they're all young fellas either. I mean, there's a faction of much older, should be a lot more mature, and who want to get involved in violence and criminality. That's one faction. There's also a faction of people who are, you know, have right wing and far right beliefs and ideology, and are kind of see an immigration issue as something that they can oppose, and they can kind of bolster support behind an anti-migrant view. So there's that faction. There's also another faction of people who are from Coolock, live in the area, and are quite sick of a lack of government support and a lack of infrastructure and a lack of investment in their area. And that's something the Sinn Féin leader, Mary Lou MacDonald, talked about yesterday. She has sent an open letter to the Taoiseach this weekend, saying that, you know, people in Coolock were sick of and of the government's arrogance, of the failure to engage with them. She said it was arrogant and disrespectful to a community that has been neglected and forgotten for generations. The community was given no opportunity to ask questions, to raise concerns, or to get clarity and assurances. So there's certainly a faction of that. But then there's also a faction of people in the community that have probably been persuaded and misguided and misinformed and disinformed by people in the far right, and kind of been riled up to take action against something that's probably, you know, this kind of trope about that migration can cause an increase in crime, which is never borne out in any evidence at all, Pat. It does not lead to that.
Roderick O'Gorman, though, has been saying last week that multiple opportunities were given to the community to engage about Crown Paints.
Yeah, well, so essentially the Department of Integration, like, they do have a community engagement team. So there is one of those that exists, and they do engage with communities over a whole all centres. Essentially what they do is they reach out to the public representatives, so that's like TDs and councillors in the area, and they reach out to like community representatives. So like in the case of Coolock, there's the Northside Partnership. So those are kind of community leaders, people who are involved in like community activism and initiatives. And especially in areas like Coolock, which are disadvantaged, a lot of them do have those like community initiative networks. So those are the people that were kind of briefed in the first instance. And that's how the information first got out in March that this was being going to be used. And then they followed that up. My understanding is they had a meeting with those reps, as I said, and then they followed that up a couple of weeks later with a detailed briefing document, which kind of outlines, like, a lot of it is stuff you already know. It kind of outlines like how many people have entered the country. They put the context as to what, I suppose, the state and the government are up against in terms of the numbers of people here. And then they put in like how many people are going to be accommodated on the site, you know, who's going to be accommodated. Is it, you know, families? Is it because we kind of have this opposition to housing single males. So is it going to be men on their own in the site? Is it going to be a mix of families? Is it just going to be women and children? Like, what's the situation? And then in the document, they do also kind of put in some things like, look, there's certain bus routes would be maybe beefed up in order to accommodate the extra people. And then also like that those people in the centre would be able to avail of like a GP coming to them, that kind of a thing. Now, some of that wasn't outlined in the briefing document, and the government have said that they can outline a lot more of that. So okay. What I understand
but
is that they are going
to... We've now got to the flashpoint, and... very hard, well, negotiating your way back from the flashpoint.
Yeah, and they did engage. They did engage. But the question, and I suppose a lot of people are saying there was no engagement or little to no engagement, I think is what they kind of mean. There was some engagement. But in a situation like Coolock, where it's so fragile, where it's so, it's like a tinderbox. I mean, anyone could have seen the minute it started from March when there were protests outside the front. I think anyone could have seen that it was going to escalate into something more. Maybe in that case, there should have been extra, even too much engagement with the community in order to be very transparent about what's happening and really try to bring people along with you. And I think that's what Mary Lou MacDonald was calling for. She had a discussion with the Taoiseach about it yesterday. But the Taoiseach is very kind of keen to draw a line between the fact that there are people who want to cause vandalism, people who want to, he's called a thuggery and criminality, and then drawing a line between that and then the community that he was saying that
they're, I mean, his line was at that the McGill Summer School, his line was, you've got the right to protest, and if you protest in an orderly fashion, the Gardaí will protect you. But if you protest in a criminal way, then the Gardaí will go after you. That was his message. Anyway, Aisling, thank you very much for that update, that briefing. Mark O'Mara, President of the Gardaí Representative Association, has been listening to that. Mark, good morning.
Good morning, Pat. How are you?
I mean, the embarrassment of this, it would appear that the Gardaí cannot protect the Crown Paints facility, that it's just a paint factory, and yet it is unprotectable. Explain.
Well, I mean, the Crown Paint factory is quite a big site, and would require significant resources in which to manage 24/7 and to resource that and secure it. And I suppose, as we've seen from some of the commentary and, you know, reports over the weekend, one particular said that, you know, Aran Garda Síochána a paid security for something of that nature. And while we don't want to leave it vulnerable, we have to acknowledge the huge draw on resources that it would require. And then, of course, as a result of that, where that would reflect on policing other parts of the city, which would require, you know, the presence of already thin blue line, for want of a better expression, but for a lack of resources overall. So it would be very difficult. But we also see images over the weekend where the public order unit were extremely effective in controlling and regaining control of the site. And I think that's something else to bear in mind and be cognizant of, Pat, you know.
All right, but it does seem like there's anarchy in Coolock, and that anarchy is very difficult for the Gardaí to contain.
Well, I think that every protest is fluid, and there is a fluidity to it, which must be evaluated by both management, Garda management, and supervisors, managers, public order units, and indeed frontline members on the scene. And I think, you know, as I said a moment ago, the effectiveness of the response of public order units more recently over the weekend show just how quickly can be brought back under control. But your original question in relation to securing the site, I think that's a very difficult one. It's one that would, number one, would be an operational policing matter, but number two would just be a massive drain on the already short
So do you believe that the Gardaí can, if you like, support a commercial security service, that might be your role, maybe a more limited role than the role that you're currently being asked to undertake?
I think, as you're aware, there's a meeting with senior leadership team on behalf of our meeting with the commission, which we sought this week. With them tomorrow is the date we're meeting with them. And a number of issues will be raised with them then. But again, to discuss a 24-hour protection of Gardaí at that site, I think that's something that is outside of the remit of myself. You know, that's something that would be discussed, I presume, with Garda management tomorrow. But it's not something that I believe I could answer on.
Now, what about the training and the preparation for events like this? Are you happy that the training is in place?
Unfortunately, I'm not. I mean, our concern would be the frontline members who attend the scene initially when the call first comes in. And it is a hugely difficult issue. But I can I just also say that I really want to commend the bravery and the actions of those frontline members over the weekend that held that line, and those that were injured, thankfully none serious, but we were aware of a young guard who a rock was thrown, a missile, and hit him on the head. He was hospitalised. He'll be out of work for some time, but I believe he's going to be okay. So we just need to, you know, commend the bravery and their attempts to control the situation over the weekend. But I think that what is required is what, and we're calling on the commissioner in relation to this, an initial training for all members who leave the Garda College. When I left the Garda College some 28 years ago, I was issued with a riot helmet. I was at some form of basic public order training. And I think that that needs to be done. I think that to protect our members, I think you saw over the weekend a video from my colleague, my vice president, Lyle Hodgins, who said that every other frontline responder, the ambulance, the fire brigade, all had hard helmets on them. And yet our colleagues frontline were left with their basically felt cap.
Presumably all of these matters will be raised with Drew
absolutely.
Harris.
Absolutely.
I'd like to read you some of the text. Hi, Pat. It is farcical at this stage that Drew Harris is still head of An Garda the Síochána. He has lost support of his workforce. He's the only person in Ireland that did not realise the Dublin riots were going to happen. Coolock is just another example of not supporting our Gardaí correctly. Road deaths gone through the roof as he cuts the traffic corps, etc., etc. Seems more concerned about the lending out of bikes. If this was any other entity, business, government department, Drew Harris would have been fired. Our Gardaí need support and they're not getting it. How does the rank and file feel about Drew Harris now?
I think, you know, again, we're looking at a situation here in relation to riots that is something new to us. And yes, it is escalating. I believe that everybody is focused on addressing the situation and trying to police it. I don't think, to be fair, and I appreciate your listener's message, I don't want it to become a point scoring exercise on behalf of the GRA. That's not what this is about. We liaise with the commissioner. We sought a meeting with him and we have a meeting arranged for tomorrow with his team. So I think an awful lot of issues that we need to raise will be raised and hopefully answered.
Now, this was a comment I got last week. It's been repeated today. I live 500 yards from Crown Paints. 9:15 Monday morning, the drug gang have already set up on my road selling crack. No Garda will come and move them. They'll deal until 9 o'clock tonight unhindered. This is everyday life around here. We need to sort these problems out first before we take on more problems. So what do you say to that, Mark? That the Gardaí are just too busy, not just with Crown Paints, but other things, to be bothered dealing with the crack gangs?
I think, unfortunately, that in any community, any society, we have issues that require urgent policing, such as drug dealing and so on. And this is one of the issues that I spoke with you a moment ago about, and that was in relation to a 24-hour, if you like, presence within the Crown Paint factory, or any other site for that matter of that size. That an ability to respond to your everyday policing, whether it be drug dealing, whether it be burglaries, whether it be other public order, whether it be your nightlife business within the city centre, would all be affected by such a huge draw. You know, on resources to man 24/7.
I'll read you some more of the comments. What the Gardaí are facing in these riots is a disgrace, criminal behaviour and thuggery. The government needs to get real. People are very scared of these lawless thugs, some of whom have just come in to join the violence. That's from a Raheny resident. Stop this far right being a problem. The problem is letting people into this country who have no right to be here. They are plain and simply coming here to take advantage of our welfare system. Another one. The government said they consulted with the local population. I would like to know what the nature of that consultation was. Did they just tell them 500 migrants were being put in with no increase of local services, like it or lump it? Remember, this is a disadvantaged area and people react in a different way to problems than those in D4. Actually, in D4, the Council and Waterways Ireland physically pushed out the migrants for the local people living there. As a woman, I'm not afraid of migrant men. I am afraid, however, of the psychopaths who burn down buildings and threaten journalists in balaclavas. That's from Sharon. And this one, it's completely pointless calling for engagement. People don't want pop-up ghettos in their neighbourhoods. The government will never sell this to any area. With regard to the fire at Crown Paints on the Malahide Road, your reporter made reference to the fact that Gardaí were conducting mobile patrols of the site throughout the night. This, in my opinion, is an unnecessary drain on Gardaí resources. I would question how our private security utilised. In the 90s, when I was working in the private security sector in Dublin, we dealt with contentious issues at numerous premises in the Greater Dublin area. In those days, we carried out the internal and external patrolling with great effectiveness, with the Gardaí only being called in when there was suspicious activity detected. Also, with the advances in surveillance equipments over the years, why is there not greater inter-agency cooperation? Mark, a final question from a listener, Denise. Can the army be brought in to try to help? You know, you can invoke the army to help the civil power if they are having difficulties.
I think that's a decision, Pat, that would be far above my, you know, my decision making. But I think some of your texts that you read out there, I mean, there's always going to be in relation to these type of protests, which the unlawful protests, Pat, and it is the thuggery and the disruption, the damage. And again, I think it's an attempt to instill fear. I think Aisling raised a comment. She said that there are young people there who will go and attend any call.
It's what we call recreational rioting.
Exactly, exactly. And I take your point in relation to your Texas point in relation to security companies and their engagement, and that may be the case, but we also need to be aware of the limited powers that they can exercise.
They have no powers of arrest, and they can't take out their batons and have a go. All right, Mark, look, thank you very much for joining us. That's Mark O'Mara, President of the Gardaí Representative Association, the GRA.
The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance.
Weekdays at 9 a.m. on News Talk.